Hi, Chris North over here. Welcome to Ride and Talk, where I'm chatting with Andy Jukes about the wonderful world of motorcycles.
Greetings, Andy Jukes here, and welcome back to Ride and Talk, the BMW Motorrad podcast. Today's guest is one of those genuinely enthusiastic souls who just lives and breathes motorcycling. In fact, the tagline, "Make life a ride," could well have been written with him in mind. You may have seen him in various BMW Motorrad videos, or been passed by him on a racetrack. He's pretty fast. Perhaps he's even taught you to ride off-road, or shown you a few tricks at an exhibition. There really isn't that much that this guy can't do on two wheels, and sharing the joy with a big grin on his face is what he does best. So strap yourselves in and listen to the wild and wacky world of Chris Northover. Welcome to Ride and Talk, Chris. Thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Andy. It's been a pleasure.
Now, listen, there's that famous BMW Motorrad hashtag out there, "Never Stop Challenging." That could have been invented for you, couldn't it?
Yeah, they did tie that one in quite nicely when I think it was on the Naked Roadster type bikes that came along on. And it did open the door for me to do stupid stuff, which is always good.
Now, the last time we spoke, you were teaching a bunch of us to ride GSs off-road in deepest Wales. And even though you were instructing and obviously behaving yourself on the bike, you could still see your enthusiasm and how much you enjoyed just being out there on two wheels with other riders. Have you always been like this?
I have, yes, particularly around bikes, but I've just sort of, yeah, I enjoy being outside, and the coaching stuff has always been a big part of my life. I was a swim teacher from the age of 16. So it doesn't matter whether I'm pushing myself or helping others learn new skills or just goofing around, having fun. I'm a happy man when I'm outside and I'm on a bike, for sure.
So tell me, who was your original inspiration? And was it the same person that got you riding in the first place?
I mean, yeah, it probably was, because I grew up with a family of motorcyclists. My dad, all my uncles, my mum, my nan, my granddad, they all rode bikes. And I can remember from a very young age sort of looking up to those guys and wanting to be in the cool gang, wanting to have stories of my own about crashing and racing and all this stuff. So definitely, even before I kind of idolized racers, it was my dad and my uncles that I wanted to be like.
Yeah, I remember seeing you on a BMW video somewhere stating that as a kid, your ambition was to race and to be a world champion. You gave it a decent shot at least, didn't you?
Yeah, I was convinced for years I was going to be world champion. That was what I wanted. I think, yeah, as I got older with bikes, I grew up in that real strong era of world superbike racing and watched all the races and went to Brands Hatch to see it with my parents. I think that got under my skin and made me really want to be a road racer and go as far as I could. I got to race in the world championship paddock, but yeah, no world titles to my name. Had a hell of a time though.
And did you always want to make a living in the bike industry, sort of following that, or at the same time, or did you just sort of fall into it like a lot of journos out there?
I think, yeah, probably the latter, really. I would have loved the idea of working in bike industry. I just never believed it was a possibility. So I wanted to be a pilot, and then I switched to engineering. And that was kind of, I was stoked. I got a job working in the motorcycle industry as an engineer. That blew my mind. Even when I was 24, I was so excited. And then, yeah, to be in the position I'm in now, where I'm riding bikes and making a living out of riding motorcycles, it was a dream that I never thought was achievable when I was a kid, and I still pinch myself over it now.
Was it a design engineer you were working as? I believe it was for another brand, but what exactly were you doing there?
Yes, a design engineer. It sounds like I drew pictures of motorbikes, but my drawing's terrible. It's as a design engineer, you kind of take the stylist's vision and turn that into reality. So everything from exciting things like making the bodywork and fitting all the bodywork together to boring stuff like making a bracket to hold the fuse box. It's all those detail bits that it's incredibly long-winded, the effort that goes into designing a modern motorcycle, but a really rewarding process.
Yeah, and certainly made you appreciate that as well, I guess.
It makes me feel bad when I crash one now, yeah.
Now, speaking of crashing, where did you develop those stunt riding skills in the first place? I mean, was it from a BMX or a skating background as a kid, or was it just, you know, a lot of practice and plenty of crashing along the way?
I honestly think it's quite a strange childhood. I was very lucky. I did lots, and I did a lot of trampolining and gymnastics. Probably, in all honesty, more seriously than motorcycle racing for most of my life up to the age of about 14, 15. I did motorcycle riding occasionally, but trampolining and gymnastics was kind of my focus, and my parents kind of helped me to get quite good at that.
You learned how to fall gracefully.
Or at least land on my feet, yeah. My friends always call me the cat.
I think a lot of people know you from the Storming the Russian Embassy vid you did on the Osset. How many views has that little film had now?
At last count, it was over 25 million, I think. It's blown my mind.
fair play. I guess you'd say that little film changed your life more than just a little bit.
100%, yeah. Someone mentioned it the other day, and we did that as a couple of friends goofing around and wanted to make a cool movie. We never for a minute believed it would be as successful as it has. And like you point out, they had such a big impact on my career. I'm still getting phone calls now of people that know me from that video and want to book me to do something completely irrelevant, but people recognize you. So
yeah, no, it's fantastic. I mean, for those who haven't seen it, just search it up. It's well worth a watch. Do you always like to set yourself riding challenges, you know, like learning how to backflip, for example?
Yeah, definitely. It's part of what keeps motorcycling exciting for me. Is always trying to find something new to learn, something new to do. It's exhausting. There's a never ending supply of possibilities of bikes to ride and tricks to do and stunts to learn and disciplines to learn. And the backflip was an example of that. It was something I'd seen for years and thought I'd love to try that. And yeah, you just have to make it happen and pass or fail.
So the last time I saw you, you just moved to Wales and bought an old farmhouse that you were planning to do up. How's that project going?
I've been flat track racing and I've been mountain bike racing. And yeah, I have a very understanding family. The house isn't finished. No, 4 years. The 6-month project is 4 years in.
It's never going to be finished, is it? If I remember rightly, it came with a few outbuildings. So I'm interested to know what vehicles you've been able to cram into those barns.
So the last count, the 31 motorcycles and eight cars.
Good effort. I've heard you've discovered flat tracking, but are you building anything exciting in there?
I'm just turning the camera so you can see. Go on, ask me that question again.
Wow, fantastic. What's that, an old rally car? Is that an Escort?
That is a Mark II Escort, yeah. That's my historic rally car. That was a brief life after racing.
Have you got any BMWs in there?
No, the BMW works. That's why it's in the other garage.
Good man. And someone told me you've also built a bike track in your backyard. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, yeah. Well, part of buying the farm for us was to make a bit of room and have some playing space. So I'll do a lot of off-road riding at the moment. So we've got a enduro track in the farm, nice training track. We did the Scottish 6-day trial, me and a friend, a few years back. So we built a load of trials training sections for that to put some hours in. And then this wonderful thing called lockdown, which has been, I know, hard for a lot of people, but it made a lot of us spend time doing the things we've never got round to doing. And for me, that was building the BMX track. So there's a little BMX track in the back garden that me and my boy have been whizzing laps ever since for the last 3 months now.
Superb. I mean, every cloud does have a silver lining, doesn't it? And you just mentioned your little boy. So you've obviously been getting him into bikes at an early age.
Yes. I'm quite happy for him to not into bikes. If he wants to do golf or swimming or fishing, I'm not fussed at all. But yeah, it's kind of inevitable when he's around me, my wife, all of our friends, the whole family, everyone's into bikes still. So yeah, bike was one of his first words for sure. And he gets very excited every time you fire up an engine.
Superb. Now, for anyone outside the UK who doesn't know Wales, can you explain what a magical place it is for riding, both on road and off road?
Yeah, I mean, that's the reason I moved here. Wales is a mecca for motorcycles. The weather's the only downside to it. If you don't like the rain, Wales can be a pain. But in all honesty, we've got such fantastic mountain roads, loads of legal trails for riding adventure bikes and enduro bikes on. Tracks, we've got two race tracks. We've got a lot of original old school road racing circuits, real characterful places like Aberdare Park, which is a road race around a duck pond, which is bonkers. And as well as the roads and the scenery, the people as well, especially in South Wales, especially around where I live, people are into bikes. All the old farmers love a bit of enduro. There's loads of racing in the Welsh blood, whether it's rallying or motorcycles. And it does feel like a kind of a bit of a petrolhead nation at times.
Are you still instructing at the BMW Off-Road Skills School down there?
Yeah, absolutely. This will be my 10th year of instructing with them. Don't feel like stopping yet. It's a really rewarding thing to do. And the flip side is you get to ride some awesome bikes in some incredible places around the world too.
What would you say you enjoy most about that role?
Honestly, it sounds corny, but it's bringing people into the world of off-road motorcycles. It's not easy to access if you've not got friends or colleagues that are riding off-road already. It can seem quite intimidating, and I think working off-road skills is it's always something we've tried to do is to make it as welcoming as possible to people who've got no off-road experience, and bringing those people in and then seeing them 2 or 3 years later with a bike on knobbly tires, a GS Adventure covered in mud in the south of Portugal, and you think, bloody hell, sorry, you probably had a really easy life before we got you messed up in this.
Any idea how many people you've taught to ride off-road down there?
It'll be in, yeah, it'll probably be around the 1,000 mark, I'd say. The school does a thousand, just over 1,000 people a year. I teach on half of those schools normally, and I normally take a group of 10 people. My maths is failing me now.
A thousand's a good number. We'll stick with that. Yeah. I mean, it must be amazing to help people develop the skills to ride those big bikes and then watch them discover that new world of riding and adventure travel opportunities that a bike like the GS offers.
Definitely, and it's a real massive confidence builder to know that when the road does kind of turn into a gravel track, you're excited to ride it rather than fearfully toddling along with your legs out. I think it's a very liberating experience being able to know that you can take a GS anywhere you want.
Yeah, I mean, you've also been involved with helping organise the National GS Trophy qualifiers for the UK team over the past years. Do you feel like the standard of riding is improving with each edition or not?
No, it's an interesting fact actually. I've been involved in the GS Trophy qualifiers for since I started with off-road skills for a good 10 years now, and as you mentioned, running them for a few years more recently. And yeah, definitely you're seeing the sort of top tier of riders are getting better and better, and that sort of fight for the prize of being on the team is getting tighter and tighter, and we're having to come up with harder challenges and tighter scoring systems. But on the flip side to that, I think we're definitely seeing more riders of a, less capable off-road ability joining in the fun. And again, that I think is just as important to get that whole spread of people from the expert riders to the novices and get them all in enjoying the GS Trophy events.
Absolutely, no, very important. Do you still own your, did you have an R1150 GSA? Was that the bike that you own or?
Yes, yeah, I've got an R1150 GSA. I'm going to pick another one up on Saturday, and
You found
I mean,
another
you can
one.
never have too many GSAs.
Yeah, well, is it another 1150?
It's another 1150 GSA, yep.
They're kind of getting rare as hen's teeth at the minute, aren't they? So you've done well to find that. Or find someone that wants to sell it. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And more recently, I've got into the older Airhead GSs. So I've had a R100 GS from 1989 that a friend of mine actually bought and rode back to Munich. He works at BMW in Munich, so that's gone back to Germany, back home now. And then I've got an R80 as well, which I absolutely adore riding.
What year is that from?
Same as me, 86.
Superb. Just hang on to it. But if you ever feel like you need to sell it, you know where I am. Just touching on road riding briefly, I'm always interested to ask this question to people who've raced nationally or even internationally like yourself. A bike like the Double R, the customer version I'm talking about, how do you feel this compares with, let's say, you know, 1,000cc race bikes that you were honing around on in Superstock Championships just a few years ago, really?
It's night and day. I rode the, when I raced Superstock 1000, I rode the very first S1000 Double R, which at the time was ahead of its competition. It was a properly incredible bike, but it was a hard bike to ride fast. Not wanting to sugarcoat it, it beat the living daylights out of me for a couple of seasons. It especially on the small British tracks. And I've actually got a test coming up on the very latest spec S1000 Double R in road and superstock trim, and having ridden them a couple of times, they're faster, but somehow miles easier to ride, and that's the biggest change, is they've made the performance more accessible and less tiring to use.
Yeah, understood. Now, you once described yourself as, I believe it was, relentlessly enthusiastic, and you seem to find a way to have a ball on just about any bike, you know, even those without 210 horsepower, like you showed with that G310R that with the longboarded dude, you made a film with him in Brazil, I think. Do you believe there's fun to be had on all kinds of bikes?
Absolutely. I think if you're not too worried particularly about how good you are or how good people think you are, if you can just put all that out of your mind, motorcycling has so much to offer. So yeah, I can't get enough of riding any bike. And I think as long as you're not too worried about what other people think of your riding or pushing yourself too hard to succeed all the time, there's a whole load of fun to be had, whether I'm riding, like you say, a 200 horsepower race bike, or whether I'm bumbling down the shops on a step through. I still get such a buzz from being on a bike. And I think there's something for everyone. Go and ride.
Just go and ride, yeah. Now, do you have any motorcycling heroes, you know, people that have really inspired you in life?
Definitely. As a kid, it was Mick Doohan and Carl Fogarty. I was kind of obsessed with those two. And then growing up, Dougie Lampkin for the trials riding. And probably have to admit, it's cliched now, but Travis Pastrana, he's an action sports athlete and a personality, he's got a lot to answer for. It's all your fault, Travis.
Yeah, he was kind of there first, wasn't he? I can remember Chris Pfeiffer saying exactly the same thing when he'd spent a bit of time in his foam pit back in the day.
Wow, yeah.
Where would you say is the best place you've ever ridden then?
Oh, now that's a tricky one. You're making me choose between my favourite children.
Okay, well, give me an on-road version and an off-road version then.
Okay, so my best on-road place to ride, I'm going to say, is Brands Hatch Grand Prix Circuit. I've been lucky to ride a lot of tracks around the world, and every time I come back to Brands, I have a fizzy feeling in my tummy. Even though I've ridden there a squillion times, I think I can still remember being a kid with my nose pressed against the wire fencing. And every time I leave pit lane at Brands Hatch, I always have that, "Ooh, I shouldn't be here."
Which corner is it for you at Brands Hatch then?
It's probably Paddock Hill Bend. It's a cliche. It's a toss up between Paddock Hill Bend and what's now called Sheen Curve. Both those bends are bends that every time you go around them, they are a roller coaster, and they're blind and they're difficult and technical. I've always been quite quick on those two bends, so it was always a good overtaking spot for me. And those are the ones that define Brands Hatch, I think.
Yeah, not everyone can overtake at Paddock Hill Bend, that's for sure. There's a lot of people come to grief there. Okay, so that's the on-road. Give me the off-road then.
Best off-road place I've ever ridden. I'm going to put this out to a trip I did with some friends in America, and we rode in Utah for 2 days. And it was just the vast freedom was the bit that blew my mind. Just being able to ride for hours and hours and hours in wilderness, with incredible views, all sorts of terrain, and not see another soul. That was really special.
Yeah, fantastic. And here's one for you then, Chris. Where do you still really want to ride?
Oh, so actually, I've been doing a little bit of work with Motorrad Tours, who's BMW UK's kind of touring arm, and they are a nightmare because they constantly show me pictures of incredible riding destinations. And at the moment, my kind of desperate to go and ride in place is probably Patagonia. Every time those guys come back from a tour, they just babble incessantly for 3 weeks about how good Patagonia is. And that's, so for me, that's a real must-see destination.
Yeah, I've ridden in Patagonia. I thoroughly recommend it, and also spoken to, actually, Richard Millington's been on the podcast, and he also mentioned Patagonia as one of his bucket list places to ride. So I totally get that. So when normal service resumes in the world, wherever that is, what's the next challenge for Chris North over them?
So you've mentioned already, yeah, the flat tracking's the big thing for me at the moment. I'm really, really excited by the flat track race series, particularly on the big bikes. It's something I've actually been meaning to do for 2 or 3 years now, but I've finally got round to it, and then they cancelled all the races, but minor blip. So the flat tracking's a big project for me. And then the next thing after that is I've got a little game called Moto Decathlon that I've invented in my head, which is to race 10 different disciplines on the same motorcycle.
Yeah, you know, when you were talking about flat tracking then, and I think you're doing that on the 1200 Indian, aren't you? Can you flat track on pretty much any bike?
Yeah, of course you can. whether you'll be fast or not is always the battle there.
But it's possible. That's brilliant. Moto Decathlon, okay, well, I'll remember that. And listeners, remember where you heard that first. That's been absolutely brilliant talking to you, Chris. Thanks ever so much for chatting to us today. It's been a real pleasure. Where can people follow your exploits?
So most of the stuff I get up to nowadays is on either my Instagram channel, which is chris.northover, not very inventive name. But I work a lot with Bike World, which is a TV show in the UK. And so most of our misdemeanors and trouble we get into is on there, so you can usually stay tuned and find out where in the world Chris is crashing a bike next.
Brilliant. Well, listen, thanks for talking to us. You take care now and enjoy the weekend, mate.
Fab, lovely to speak to you, Andy. See you soon.
Thanks, Chris. You're a ruthless enthusiast indeed, and if it's got two wheels, you can be sure to find where the limits are. Good on you, mate, and we salute your never stop challenging attitude. By the way, if any listeners out there didn't catch that video reference earlier, just search up Storm the Embassy on YouTube and watch him playing inside and outside an old Russian consulate building on an Osset electric Charles bike. It's 5 minutes of magic, I can assure you. Well, that's it for today. Hope you enjoyed listening to Chris's antics. And if you're liking what we're doing with the Ride and Talk podcast, then please let us know by giving us a rating, as it'll help others find us. Until next time, stay safe out there and make life a ride. Bye for now.